Hi, I'm Kelly Corrigan. You've probably never heard of me. Maybe you did. I wrote some New York Times bestsellers. I gave a TED Talk. But the reason I'm in your ear now is to invite you to listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders. We talk to everyone from Bono to Amy Schumer, Spike Lee to Rainn Wilson, Krista Tippett and Bryan Stevenson about purpose, creativity, well-being, and what makes life worth living. Follow and listen to Kelly Corrigan Wonders on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping and have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle all your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off USPS and UPS. Add flexibility to your day with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
Chipper here, 2:08. Chipper, was that Sam Darnold or was that Sam Darnold? Who do we have last night? Did we have USC Sam Darnold? It was the third pick in the draft. Did we have New York Jets Sam Darnold? Do we have Vikings Sam Darnold, who's headed for a comeback player of the year? Or do we have the guy who last night would have overthrown Victor Wembanyama if he was open in the end zone? Because that was an ugly performance from the this year star quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't the quarterback we've seen all season. I was just looking back the notes I took last night, and I wrote down he misses Hockenson twice on third down in the first quarter, threw way high, too yep. amped up. Yep. And I kept waiting for him to settle down, and he never did. You could tell from his first throw. And we've seen this a couple times this year when he's excited or nervous or amped, whatever you want to call it, that he throws high. And, you know, just the number of overthrows he had in that first half, he couldn't get settled in. And I think nerves and the moment and the stage and all that has something to do with it. I think, obviously, Detroit, their game plan – aggressive as we've seen Andrew Crane, my colleague.
Yeah.
Did you see the stats?
Yeah, great stats.
Going into it, but 14-0 blitzes, which is an all-out blitz. You defend the guys on the receivers, but everybody else is blitzing. That's more than any team has done in any NFL game this season. And then, which the Vikings never see, or rarely see, is the man-to-man coverage because, you know,
Jefferson and Madison, you're afraid of them.
They played man 67% of the time, which was the second highest rate of any game in the NFL this season. So this was a defense that they have not seen, this scheme that they saw last night. And I don't think – clearly Donald didn't react well to it. I don't think KLC did either with the play calling and just continuing to these long developing plays – that you're trying to take shots down the field because they never see. We hear them all the time. They never get to see man coverage on Jefferson, so they tried to exploit it, and it just backfired.
Well, you nailed so many points there. Let me try to pick the ones because you added a lot. Let's stay with Darnold. There's no doubt he was pressured a lot, okay, and that's going to get to you. But even before the pressure was getting to him, Chipper, you're so right on the Hockenson throws. And then just on the – on the red zone decisions, which, by the way, because I'm going to criticize O'Connell later, I had no problem going for touchdowns. I really didn't. You assume when you're playing the Lions on the road, they're getting 31 minimum. They've had 40.6 games. But on those drives, I can see them right now. You got Addison running to the pylon. He's open, throwing the ball. Darnold's looking at him. You got Addison breaking from the pylon on a quasi pick, and he's going to wheel up to the end line, but you've got him wide open.
That's the one.
Darnold is staring at him. Then you have Jefferson from that same spot where Addison was coming across the end zone line. He's two strides ahead of, I don't know, some guy they've signed off the street because I don't know who's playing cornerback for him. And he throws way behind him. I thought that was the one play Collinsworth got totally wrong. He's like, oh, Jefferson should have made that play. It was a yard and a half behind him. And then the other one where it's the stop and go.
Yeah.
And maybe he gets his arm hit. But, Chip, I watched it a couple times. I mentioned this earlier. I think he gets his arm hit after he releases it. He misses Jefferson by 5 yards. You cannot miss those throws, all of them.
The one that really jumped out to me was the one you mentioned about Addison, where they have the rub route.
Yep.
I mean, I thought that was the first look. Like, you could just see it like that.
He's staring at him.
He's going to walk into the end zone.
Yeah.
I don't know why he didn't pull it on that one, throw there. You know, maybe he just had Jefferson in his mind, and that's what he's going. I mean, look, I mean, he was off.
Yeah.
There's no other way to say it. But he threw the ball terribly last night. And
he did. It was Jacksonville like.
Were you bothered with the run pass ratio in the red zone?
Yes, I was. I was.
To me, that's where I think the criticism comes, because I think Seifert somewhere, all the writers had, was it 11 runs?
No.
And I forgot how many, or 11 passes, how many runs? Not
many. It was 11 plays in the red zone, 9 passes, 2
yeah,
runs.
Yeah, 2 runs. That's, I just felt like,
that doesn't work.
When you have a quarterback that's jittery like that.
Yep.
You know, I think you could have gotten something with your run game there. And so I felt like they abandoned the run game too much, particularly when you needed to get Sam settled down. And I think that contributed to the problems.
Because there were times when they were more in the middle of the field, not just the Akers big run, but other plays, they were running effectively. So
yeah.
let me stay with Darnold just longer version here, because if it turns out this way, we'll have this conversation over and over and over again. But
mm-hmm.
We've both kind of come around to the idea that he just has played so good that who knows if he's your starter, but you just can't let him walk. At minimum, you have to franchise him, right? So let's say he goes to SoFi next week and plays the same way and has another game where the moment is too big for him. That would end any multi-year deal talk.
Yeah,
but
I think
but
franchise.
But
yeah.
Would you walk away from the franchise? Because if they franchise him and nobody makes a deal for him, then you got that guy at $40
million. Yeah.
But do you just let him walk out for only a third-round draft choice after all the success?
If he plays like he did last night, I don't see him coming back on the franchise. Do you? I mean, that would be two just major, major poor performances with the pressure turned on him. And
it's fair.
What would give you confidence to do that? Now, I've said all along, this whole conversation, what they do with them, we need to see the full picture.
Yep.
That's why we need to, you know, 4 weeks ago, it was like, no, you got to see the whole thing before you know what you have to do. And that's clearly what the team's going to do. So let's see if he bounces back. I mean, this is a big week for O'Connell and Darnold, but I think O'Connell, not just his quarterback, but the entire team. We talked about this last week, right, Chad, that the danger is you put so much into this game. If it goes sideways and doesn't go well, did you invest everything you have into this one game where you don't it wasn't a win or go home. Now, your road's a lot harder than it would have been if you'd won, but they've got to regroup and rally here mentally and emotionally after such buildup and what was on the line with that game. And so this is going to be a big task for O'Connell to kind of pull that up and get his players back in the right frame of mind.
All right, let's stay with O'Connell. Let's pause here with Chip and talk about any other adjustments that KOC should have made, in particular these long developing routes, which have worked a lot this year. Like, and it's really featured great throws by Darnold. But when they're blitzing everybody, including Eminem, you got to adjust, right? And then the Jay Glazer report of a trade, which I assume is going to absolutely positively, unequivocally no. But I joked early, if let's say the Jets wanted, what do you want from New York, Chip? Statue of Liberty? The Bronx? I mean, what do you want? What do we think of that whole situation? And then just facing the Rams, they get a full week, but it'd be crazy if they lose 4 games all year and they lose in the exact same way. They lose to Detroit. And they go to L.A. They lose to Detroit and go to L.A. Our buddy Chip Scoggins right back with us here on CCO. I don't know. Do we call her co-speaker? Do we call her potentially Speaker of the House? Lisa Damoth is going to join us in about 16, 17 minutes on the chaos in St. Paul. All right, let's go to O'Connell. We both believe he is an excellent coach. We both believe he's headed for Coach of the Year. I applaud him for designing a lot of these routes where it's not just, hey, here's a pitch to Aaron Jones, here's an underneath route. They explore all aspects of the field. But you nailed it. When it's zero coverage 14 times, when they're blitzing 56% of the time, when they're getting pressure half the time, he's got the playbook of thousands of plays, whatever they have. Where are the quick hitting routes? I just didn't understand that last night.
Yeah, that was the confusing thing to me. And I my hunch is, well, we know Darnold has led the NFL in passes over 20 yards for the season.
You know, what else he's led him into? Completion rate against the blitz.
Yeah.
So both those areas. Yeah.
So I think there was confidence that even when he's blitzed, that they can get the ball down the field, and particularly because I think they just don't see man coverage to the degree that they saw last night, and I think probably incorrectly, he thought Jefferson, Addison, they're going to win those matchups, and Darnold's going to be able to hit some big plays and make them pay for blitzing and playing man. But the line didn't hold up. Sam started, getting rattled back there, and they hit him a lot. And I think we have to give the Lions credit too. Now,
yes, sir.
Jefferson mentioned it, and the TV showed it a couple times. They were being physical. They were grabbing, but that's not an excuse.
I think it's smart, though, Chip, in a game like that where the officials are trying not to get involved. That's where, the Vikings defense until really late, they were really good, right? I don't think either one of us is here to criticize Steve, but I applaud Aaron Glenn with all the guys out where he is taking a chance, and he's also telling those guys, get physical. If we have to adjust as the game goes along, we will.
Yep.
They didn't need to.
No. I mean, they called a couple, but there wasn't any that deterred him from playing that way. And they had to, because you're playing backups. I think it felt just like a go for broke type thing here. Like, you can't sit back and let Darnold pick you apart. And so they had this just ultra super aggressive scheme and game plan. And that's where you wondered where the lack of adjustments by KO to say, let's get the ball out of Sam's hands quick. One, to get him in the rhythm, and two, to try to combat this pressure that he's facing and help him get settled in. And they just continued to try to look down the field for those big shots. And it backfired on him.
The Glazer report, I think, caused a lot of us to chuckle. I know I chimed in because I think how Glazer phrased it is there are teams interested in Kevin O'Connell. So I retweeted that and added, I'm interested in winning the Masters. I mean, we have a lot of interest in a lot of things, I'm interested in Halle Berry coming over for dinner tonight. I don't think either is going to happen. He's got 1 year to go. God, we've joked about this a lot. You watch those videos. If they win, Ziggy Wilf is bursting with pride. I'm not sure we've ever had that look on her face when her kids have rode a bike for the first time or walked or graduated college. I see no scenario, unless we somehow have missed, that he's not happy behind the scenes. And there has been no inkling of that at all, right?
No. I have a lot of respect for Jay Glazer. I covered him a lot when I was the beat writer, and he would come into town in 09 and get to know him a little bit. He's a heck of a reporter. And I'm sure there are teams that will make a call and say, hey, what would it take? But my colleague Ben Gessling had to sit down with the Wilfs.
That was a real good story. Yep.
And they said, hey, both him and Kwesi, as soon as the season's over, they're going to, do the extensions. And I'm sure it's going to be a massive deal for KO. So I understand why people rolled their eyes and got a chuckle out of it, but I don't think he's saying it was going to happen. He was saying that teams are interested in seeing with the possibility, but it's not going to happen. They're going to sign him to an extension.
I think they're probably going to sign him to an extension 5 years, $10 million, something like that. I mean, his coaches' money is really jumping up. I'll be curious if Kwesi gets the same amount, right? The same, not total money. He's not.
Term, you mean term?
Term. Is he going to get the same? Because Kwesi's had... That was a great offseason. Why am I forgetting the Colts? Got Grigson. I know a lot of people tell me that Grigson really gets a ton of credit. because it's not like Kwesi's a longtime football guy.
Yeah. Well, that's it. He's more of a non-traditional. And I forgot the team. I saw it on Twitter today. Some team asked to speak to Grigson for an interview.
Yeah.
Was it the Jets? I can't remember who it was, but some team has wanted to interview him for, you know, I assume their GM job. So they had a number of coaches.
Flores and McCown both asked by the Jets.
Yeah, and Grigson. So we'll see if that, you know, if that continues with the other teams that have openings now.
Let's talk about the defense. Gibbs would turn out to be the best player on the field, but when Ben Johnson decides to start, we're going to run the ball. Gibbs was 6 for, I think, either a yard per. I mean, he was doing nothing, or maybe it's even 6 carries for a yard. Eventually just, God, he's fast. He's frighteningly fast.
He's electric.
Man, he's fun to watch. He is, and they can use him all sorts of ways. And even with his size, he's not afraid to challenge guys. Mm-hmm. But the defense was awfully good, Chip. I really did, you know. And there's obviously one enormous play, and I've heard a lot of analysis on it, is when Goff makes a bad throw and you're thinking, is Van Ginkle going to get his third pick six? But you watch that replay, okay?
Yeah.
He's throwing a pretty much a bullet. Van Ginkle gets his left hand on it and isn't able to bring it back. I don't think Jefferson brings that back all the time. That would have been in a spectacular interception by Van Ginkle.
Yeah, I have a hard time criticizing defense. I mean, obviously, Bynum took a bad angle on the one, the first touchdown run. Okay, that happens. Gibbs is super talented. He's fast. They put the team in a position to do something. I mean, to hold that offense to what they did until the kind of the dam burst there late, got what, 2 interceptions. It's hard to criticize that side of the ball at all. I thought they hung in there and gave the team a chance to win, and the offense just didn't pull its weight. And so I was a little surprised. It was a low scoring game there.
I was stunned.
You know, 10-6 at halftime? I mean, nobody saw that coming. So, no real criticism of anything on the defensive side.
And it should have been 7-6 because Will Riker, I don't know what you're doing. Just and this OPA stats, which was on Twitter, is worth mentioning again. The Vikings in the red zone 4 times, not a touchdown. 3 times goal to go, not a touchdown. 2 failed 4th and goal attempts. 1 missed field goal, according to OPA stats, which until, I don't know, 11:30 last night, I never heard of. That has never happened in the last 30 years. With all that happening, it's hard for me to look at Brian Flores facing the best offense in football and saying, hey, B-Flow, we got to have a serious conversation.
That's it. I mean, you're not going to beat, like, even mediocre teams all the time with those, you know, with those stats, much less the best team in the NFC. And, you know, I think we have to give a nod to Detroit with all the injuries they've had on defense.
Fantastic.
To just keep plowing along. I mean, Dan Campbell is a great coach. He is. I mean, I know he's not for some because of his aggressiveness, but the guy knows how to get a team prepared to play.
Well, I mean, it seems like O'Connell's going to win Coach of the Year, but is it possible Coach of the Year might have been swung over to Campbell last night? You know, the Vikings are the more unexpected. It's almost always the unexpected.
Yeah.
But you just nailed it. 15-2 with 17 guys on the injured reserve. And even though Terry Arnold hasn't been the guy he was at Alabama, he's still their starting cornerback, and he goes out last night.
Yeah. I think the vote might be closer than it was. I think going into that game, it was going to be pretty lopsided in O'Connell's favor. And that might have swung a few votes, but I still think because of the unexpected, you know, 14-3 with Sam Darnold and, you know, the reclamation project there. And I still think O'Connell wins it, but you wouldn't find an argument with me with Dan Campbell being the coach of the year because of how that team has just really survived all these injuries, which, you know, it would have sank a lot of teams. That's
correct.
Just,
yep.
That many is absurd.
Let's finish with this. The NFL gives either the Lions or the Vikings a favor because, in theory, they could have put this game at Saturday night, right? So it's Monday night. It's in L.A. I know the Rams won. I know McVay is one of the 2 or 3 best coaches. But here's the bottom line. The Vikings are the better team. Mm-hmm. The Vikings are the better team. That is not Ford Field. That is not a tough place to play. they should win that game next Monday night.
I agree. I mean, this is getting the money draw for them, I think, is great because it gets you more time to kind of recover both physically and emotionally from this. That atmosphere last night was off the charts. I mean,
yes,
you could tell from the,
awesome,
you know, talking to people that were there, said it was just bonkers. And then you could tell by the stadium how revved up it was. And that's the best team, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're in a class right now that they've proven to be the best team in the NFC. And so I don't know what the spread is. I assume it's already out.
2.5-point favorites, Vikings.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
Yep.
But here's the thing. The quarterback has to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now they're not. I don't think they're going to face that same defensive game plan where you're getting, you know, zero blitzes 14 times. It'll be different. So, but this is, you know, to get him back mentally and kind of figure out all the, you know, schematic things that went wrong. This will be an important week for him to kind of get recentered again.
Thank you, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right, bro. See you.
Chip Scoggins. Lisa Damoth. What is going on in St. Paul? Are the Democrats going to show? If they don't show, what does Lisa Damoth do? Is she co-leader? Is she co-speaker of the House? Is she speaker of the House? Because we're looking at seemingly it's 67-66. Lisa Damoth in minutes on CCO. All right, at one point it looked like you would have to be bipartisan in the Minnesota House because we were staring at 67-67. Well, now, with one individual, Curtis Johnson, out because novel concept, he didn't live in the district. So he said he stepped down, but he never assumed the position, and he never should have run because he wasn't qualified for the job. So until we have another election, you have the Republicans at 67-66, and we have a war of words taking place. Let's bring in Representative Lisa Damoth into the conversation. Lisa, like all of our guests, is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Are you the next Speaker of the House? Are you the next co-Speaker of the House? Where do you think it stands as of now?
Good afternoon, Chad. Great question. Good to talk with you. Thank you so much for laying out the situation of where we are. We will start session on January 14th. Republicans will hold an organizational majority with 67. And because what you laid out with the candidate that was a member-elect temporarily in Roseville, who was never meeting the courts decided this.
Mm-hmm.
He did not meet the residency requirement. And so they will come in at 66. That gives the Republicans an organizational majority. And so I will be elected as Speaker of the House on the 14th.
Okay, you spoke to the media earlier. So did last year's Speaker of the House, who at one point seemingly was going to be your co-speaker, Melissa Hortman. Let's play. We got a couple sound bites. Let's play this one first and get you react. Go ahead, Dave.
To pretend that they have a majority while acknowledging they can't do a single thing with 67 votes just shows the naivete of their current position.
Melissa Hortman is calling you and your fellow Republicans naive. What do you say?
I would say that the facts prove themselves out right now. They only have 66 members that are eligible to take office on the first day of session, not including the fact that over in Shakopee, we are waiting for a court decision of another race where that Democrat, as things flipped on the Secretary of State that night, Republican won, then zeroed out, went to the Democrat, that with a recount shows that the Democrat was up by 14, but 20 ballots were thrown away. And so we have 20 voters over in the Shakopee area that are completely disenfranchised. Going back to, can we organize with 67? We can elect a speaker with 67. The Democrats will have 66. While we are still waiting on this other case, Democrats could easily be down to 65. And so to say that we are naive in this, no, this is reality, and it broke the Democrat trifecta, and they are not happy about it.
Okay, but Melissa Hortman is saying that the law, as is written, says that you can't carry out the practical purposes needed of running the House as 67. Is she wrong?
To pass a bill constitutionally, we need 68 votes, and we recognize that. But if there are 133 members that are in their seats and we can go ahead and organize the House, we will be able to do so. What we have heard, and maybe you're going to get to this, is that the Democrats have said without a power sharing agreement, which does not exist at this point because there is not a tie, that they will not show up on day one and they will effectively be on strike.
Well, in fact, can I just stop you here? Because I'll play you that exact soundbite. We were in sync.
Perfect.
Here's also what Melissa Hortman said in the last hour.
She never did say that they have a quorum. She knows they don't have a quorum. She assumes that we're going to show up. We're not going to show up and have them illegitimately seize power.
Okay. What happens if on January 14th, I mean, we're talking next week, Melissa Hortman and the 65 other representatives, at least at this point, a total of 66, don't show up? What do you do?
We House Republicans will be in our seats on the 14th at noon to be sworn into office. Just like the Constitution says, that's when we will convene as a legislature. Our voters and the people of Minnesota expect those elected to show up. And so we will be there to put this veiled threat out there saying, if we don't have a power sharing agreement, we're not going to show up to work, is a terrible thing to say to Minnesotans. There is no power sharing agreement needed when there is not a tie. We have 67, they have 66. My expectation is that Democrats will do the right thing for their constituents and show up just like they had talked about back when we needed a power sharing agreement, which is not needed now. When we did, they said, we want to work bipartisan. I would say, go ahead and show us. Do you or do you not? There will be 134 members that can show up that day. 67 Republicans will absolutely be in their seats.
Okay. As of now, and again, this is Representative Lisa Damith, who is either the next Speaker of the House, the next co-Speaker of the House. We're waiting to see. We'll get to the election if it's going to happen on the 28th. So Melissa Hortman is saying we're not going to show. Do you believe her? Or do you think they're just blowing smoke a little bit? In the end, they're trying to push you into a different position and that they're going to show and they're just talking this way 8 days out.
I think they're grasping for every bit of leverage because they hate the fact that they are no longer in control. What we saw over a complete Democrat trifecta over the last 2 years showed us that they didn't want to work in a bipartisan fashion. And when we thought we were at a tie, they were going to be forced to. I say what this looks like is if already they realize that they are down at least one member, if not two, and they are refusing to work with Republicans, it really brings into question how honest they were being with an actual power sharing agreement. Or is this just a prelude to what it would have been like over for the next 2 years trying to work with Democrats? They have no intent of being bipartisan or working together based on their response in the media today saying they weren't even going to show up and be the representatives that they were elected to be.
If they don't show, what will you do?
We will be there ready to work. Secretary of State is the one that presides over the House chamber to get it organized. We have the potential of raising the question, is 68 a true needed quorum number, or the fact that there is only 133? Could it be that only 67 is needed? And we will make sure the ceremonial Speaker of the House to get it organized. I can't imagine that Steve Simon would become political in this quest to get the House organized. So we will move and do everything that we can to get the House organized so we can get to work for the people of Minnesota. That is what they expect us to do.
Will you attempt to punish them in any way if they don't show?
You know, I don't know that there's a need for punishment, but it's expected that you would show up for work. And I would say, if you don't show up for work, why would you need a seat on a committee if you're not going to be there and be part of first day getting everything organized and being sworn in? So not an intent to punish, but it will not be forgotten either by House Republicans or Minnesotans.
Melissa Hortman also said that she would fully expect, even if they don't show, that Democrats will continue to get paid. Should they get paid?
Constitutionally, legislative salaries are guaranteed. So, yes, they would get paid, but I would ask Minnesota taxpayers, do you want your taxpayer dollars to go to elected officials that aren't willing to show up and do the work? I don't think they will.
Do you believe
taxpayers are not going to go for that?
We obviously have challenged Governor Walz and this special election for the 28th. Where do you think we're headed with that?
I think it's interesting that Governor Walz did the power play that he did. The statute is very clear that when there is an election contest and a vacancy occurs because of that, that the writ of special election should be issued 22 days after the first day of session. So on January 14th, you count 22 days, and on February 5th, Governor Walz should have called for that special election. House Republicans absolutely want that seat filled, but we want the governor to follow the law in that process. If he was able to follow the law as he should, there is nothing to prevent an organized House from calling that to happen sooner. But he needs to follow the law. We need to organize the House, and then we could potentially move it up. The way that Governor Walz interpreted this and called for this, a person that was never eligible to hold the seat did not resign the seat. That seat did not become vacant until midnight last night when Representative Jamie Becker Finn's term expired. It was never vacant before then.
Yeah, no one took an oath for that. Johnson did not take an oath for that position.
He was ineligible. Yeah, ineligible to take the oath, according to courts.
This is Representative Lisa Damoth. She might be the next speaker. She might be the next co-speaker. A couple last questions. I'll let you go. Do you see any scenario over the next few days where you and Melissa Hortman are going to sit down face-to-face and try to work out a deal?
I am always open to having those conversations. Right now, the deal is House Republicans have 67. House Democrats have 66. We need to come to work. They need to show up. We need to organize the House. I will be speaker, and we will move forward. Anything could be negotiated, but this power play of we're not going to even show up is absolutely ridiculous. I'm happy to sit down and talk with her. We talked yesterday face-to-face. They made an offer that said, hey, let's just treat it as if we're actually tied. And I said, we're not tied. We're not doing it that way. And this is where we sit.
Do you want to hear from the governor?
I would be interested if the governor actually wants to have a functional legislature that's willing to get to work, but I have not heard from the governor. A few weeks ago, I contacted his office and asked for some type of a standing meeting if we could get that moving forward. I think just building that working relationship that could be handled over the next 2 years would be helpful. The governor's office was in receipt of my request. They have not yet contacted me or set anything up.
Let me also ask you about what's happened with fraud in this state. As we know from Feeding Our Future, from the autism centers, that this state has watched hundreds of millions of dollars in fraud on cases that have garnered a lot of attention in our state and all across the country. And there has been criticism at all levels, including towards Governor Walz. Governor Walz late last week set up a new fraud investigative unit and announced a package of other proposals tied to this. What was your assessment of how that played out?
We have been talking about fraud, and it has been known through the Office of Legislative Auditor reports that show within multiple agencies that there is a lack of internal controls that has allowed this to move forward, continued fraud across agencies. We have been sounding the alarm bells on it. And so while the governor had a full Democrat trifecta over the last 2 years and could have made meaningful changes, instead he chose to ignore it or not do what was necessary and come out just over a week before session is going to start with an executive order. I am grateful that he's recognizing that there is almost $1 billion of fraud in the state of Minnesota and wants to do something. But moving people around within the executive branch is not the way to do it. House Republicans will be having a committee that will address fraud and agency oversight, because it's important to remember that the governor, even with the known fraud, has not fired a single commissioner or held anyone accountable. I think it is irresponsible that he waited this long, but yet I am grateful that he finally decided to step up and recognize the issue. The way he's handling it, I don't fully agree with. I think that is going to take conversations. Obviously, it's going to take legislative action, and House Republicans are ready to lead.
Lisa, thanks so much. I appreciate the candor. We'll stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chad.
This is Representative Lisa Damoth, who wants to be the next speaker, might be the next speaker, might be the next co-speaker. For me, Dave, Democrats have to show up. Get out of here. I know they're not pleased with how this has worked out, and they still, Tapke might be affirmed for his position, and they clearly are favored in the other race just with the history of Democrats winning. But right now, Dave, it's 67-66.
That is the score.
And I think it's embarrassing if they don't show up. You want to defend that side?
I do not. I do not show up for your job, do your job, and sorry, at least at this point, take the loss because that's where it stands.
Yeah, you're one short at this point. 51 past 2 on CCO. I'm hearing one more political rumor. You know, we talked January 6th. We just talked with Lisa Damoth. I am hearing that Jason DeRusha from Drive Time with Jason is thinking about renouncing his U.S. citizenship, becoming a Canadian, and running for prime minister.
Well, I would like to lead the charge to make Canada the 51st state.
Yeah.
I think I can best do it from within
the
Canadian government. I could still do the show from Canada, right?
Oh, yeah. We got the comrades.
Fine.
You can do that.
Fine. Sure.
Can you keep all your endorsements if you're the prime minister? Because I bet the prime minister position, when do they get paid? Dave, can you Google?
Probably not that good. I don't know. Trudeau looks very good, though. He's very well dressed. I bet he goes to JH and Sons at the Galleria in Edina, would be my guess.
You know what? He has a lot of pork. You know,
yeah.
That helps.
Yeah, he does.
He looks tremendous.
He does.
But guess what?
A little beat down. A little beaten down.
I don't think it worked out real well.
No.
He was pretty much forced out. You have the cardigan going today.
Little cardigan. I wasn't quite sure what to do today. I'm going to the Gophers basketball game tonight.
Ohio State, I believe, right?
You know, I only focus on our teams.
Yeah, okay. I see that. Maybe Sam Darnold should have focused more on his team last night, too. Dan, you're Mr. College Basketball. Is it Ohio State?
It is.
I thought I saw Ohio State.
Yeah. 8 p.m. Corey Provis on the call.
Corey Provis? That's late for you, 8 p.m.
Night's just getting started.
Okay. Do you have some places you like to go around campus?
I do, but I'm going to go home and change into something. I'm bringing the whole family.
So are you going to go?
I got to get my Gopher sweatshirt on.
He's such a fraud. He's going.
Got a cap. Got a
show up wearing your Marquette stuff.
Marquette in action tomorrow night. Number 8 in the country right now. Playing well.
Who will they lose to in the second round?
That's what they do. That is their specialty.
It's either a Saturday or Sunday, and they're all hyped. And then I'm monitoring you on Twitter. And, you know, you don't have to go to all these games wearing, like, a Twins shirt or a Viking shirt.
I don't always wear this stuff. I usually don't wear, like, Timberwolves don't wear gear. That's sort of a different, it's more like a fashion show.
It's a fashion show.
Timberwolves game. That's more my speed.
Yeah. Well, if they keep losing, it's not going to be as much of a fashion show. I got to be honest.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Because we're going to start talking about Minnesota sports fans.
Yeah.
And I think we may be the worst sports fans in the country.
Because why?
We seem to love it when our team fails.
I'm so with you in this. I lament this. And I did a few weeks ago, Oban, just enjoy it. And so all I was seeing on Twitter last night, of course this happened.
I heard Vanita this morning, the queen of positivity, is like, well, you know, I was getting nervous. I figured we were probably going to mess it up. You're like, what is wrong with us? What is wrong with us?
That goes back to
and
the psilocybin.
People will blame it like, oh, well, this happened. You people are choosing to be this way. Minnesota sports fans are choosing to be the worst sports fans in the country.
And I understand the history.
I get it.
I get the feeling they could be 16-0 and the opponents would not have scored. And they say, I knew it was going to work.
I knew it.
You know. All right. So Mr. Chicago, Mr. Marquette, is going to make fun of his fake state, Minnesota. Good luck to you.